started.
In announcement, we won't have class on Monday. I'll be out on travel. So we will pick up on Wednesday. Any questions before we dive in?
So we need some studio before class.
Yes. No. Sorry, if you guys were born in the wrong decade, you were hoping that me being out of town meant, well, there's no way to turn me in. Online, you kind of can. Any other questions? Midterm going okay? Yeah. Hope so. They were all ordered Monday. 4-day turn plus shipping. Should put us in like maybe Monday.
How will we use this email when they come in?
I'll distribute those somehow. So if it happens Monday while I'm out, I'll have somebody help me to make those available. So I'll email with details if that happens. I'm not sure if it's Monday or Tuesday, depending on what shipping was ordered on the conference. Otherwise, midterm, everybody's done. Found it disturbingly simple.
I like the idea of treating it Wednesday.
Ideas are great, right? Everybody go. I don't know about that, but we're going to keep it Monday. Really, you guys already talked me into another day. So I was going to have it due Friday. But when it was asked, I don't have any real argument why it needed to be. So you got until Monday. I'm going to draw the line somewhere. If I give you till Wednesday, on Monday you guys would say, well, Friday would be nice. Yeah, so it's due Monday before 10:10. So, any other questions? Nothing? Okay, good. So today we're going to wrap up on these resonant switch cells, quasi-resonant, quasi-square wave, that we've been talking about. Last time we started looking at beyond just the quasi-resonant ZVS that we had analyzed directly in class. Can we more simply draw conclusions about these switch cells used in other converters without having to rederive or new state plane each time for each one? And we found that, yes, we can. We're really, by conception of these switch cells, looking at only the high frequency dynamics, abstracting them away from the remaining converter. We assume that we've got passives constituting the rest of the converter that are low frequency filter type elements, and we analyze these two things independently. So if we know the switch cell conversion ratio, we can just plug it into the parent converter. Done. Okay. So that's pretty nice. Here's a summary of solution of these four switch cells compared to the PWM converter. And we found that we can take these results, just plug in and replace duty cycle with mu, the switch conversion ratio, and jump from our large signal, small signal, any models of our parent converter with PWM type modulation into the behavior of that converter with this resonant switch cell. One thing that was left was looking at, okay, what about the small signal dynamics? What about transfer functions and control of these things? When we ended here last class, we're going to carry that through and just do an example of a small signal model of one of these converters, and then we'll conclude and move on to new topics. So the idea is that from our PWM small signal model, we just replace all the D's with mu's. So now I have mu in my transformer here, That mu is my steady state solution, my DC solution. And then I have mu hat replacing D hat, my small signal perturbation. And the problem is mu hat, unlike D hat, is not our control. You don't get to just tell it, go to this mu hat. Mu is this conversion ratio of the switch cell, which depends on things like switching frequency, inductor current, and input voltage, as well as which switch cell we use and what the L and C values are. So the things that are going to be dynamically varying are switching frequency, inductor current, and input voltage. So my mu, should have had a hat here. In my linearized small signal model, I can say mu hat is the linear contribution from each of these three small signal varying signals. FS, my control, then IL and DG, two signals within my circuit, where these three coefficients, KI, KC, and KV, are just the partial of the overall expression mu with respect to the relevant variable evaluated at DC. Okay, so that's just my Fourier series expansion, or Taylor series expansion to first order with respect to all three of my inputs. Summed up, because now I've linearized and I can use superposition. Say they're all three. So let's go ahead and solve those things. So we're going to jump through and do a bit of math. Go to a different color. So we can simplify and not have to really do three different full partial derivatives of this expression by looking at what are these partial derivatives actually going to be. So the partial of mu with respect to IL, as I look at this thing, I have mu is equal to 1 minus f over 2 pi times all this. We define that as 1 minus f times e 1 half of 1 over jl. I'm going to simplify these a little bit by relating them back to that function, and then only having to take a partial of that function with respect to jl. Actually take one partial. So partial of mu with respect to il, I can say, is the partial of this expression with respect to jl times the partial of jl with respect to il. So take the partial of this expression here with respect to jl, it's going to look like 1 minus f times the partial e 1 half of 1 over jl with respect to jl. And I can work with this and not have to plug in all of these.
Expand my variables. And then I'm going to multiply that by,
did the partial, this one goes away.
Take the partial derivative of 1 with respect to jl is 0. That's gone. Minus f times p 1 half 1 over jl. Partial derivative of that with respect to jl. And then that times by chain rule the partial of jl with respect to il to get my overall partial with respect to il. Partial of jl with respect to il is r naught over bg.
Okay.
I'm going to jump down and do KV next, because it's going to be the most similar form. It's going to be almost the same. The only thing that's going to change is this partial of JL with respect to VG. If I put this term and say take the partial with respect to VG, it's going to be minus F times the partial of U and half with respect to JL times the partial of JL with respect to VG instead of IL.
Minus F the partial of P 1 half 1 over JL with respect to JL. So the partial of this thing with respect to VG is minus IL R naught over VG squared. evaluated it. Let's see.
And this middle one,
partial of my conversion ratio with respect to FS, is going to be a little bit different, but easier, in that this P1/2/1/JL doesn't depend on FS, so I'm just going to evaluate that. And then my whole partial comes in this F term. F is FS over F naught. So just going to, the whole thing is proportional to FS. So I'll just get minus 1 over F naught times P1/2/1/JL, just evaluated at DC.
You're not take partial of this expression for this one, just evaluate it with the DC solution. So I'm nearly there. All I'm going to have to do now is evaluate this partial derivative, partial of this expression with respect to JL, and then I can plug it in KI and KB and have all three of these.
So we'll do that on the next slide. Say we'll just copy down P1/2/1/JL, 1/2 pi times, I have 2/JL plus I plus the arc sine 1/JL. JL plus root JL squared minus 1. Swap those last two terms. So the partial of that thing with respect to JL is going to be
1/2 pi out front. I'll just multiply everything, and then I'm going to do partials of each term with respect to JL.
Give me what? So 1/2 JL is going to become minus JL over 2JL squared. Minus 1/2 JL squared.
The pi is just going to go away.
Partial of pi with respect to JL is 0. Plus partial of this arc sine of 1/JL with respect to JL. So the partial derivative of an arc sine is 1/√(1 − x²). So the partial of arc sine is going to give me 1/√(1 − 1/JL²).
This is just, I treat 1/JL as x. Partial of arc sine of x, 1/√(1 − x²). Then my chain rule, I need to multiply by the partial derivative of that x, which is 1/JL.
Which will give me in the numerator, I'll multiply minus 1/JL².
That's partial derivative of just 1/JL.
Okay, next term, partial of JL with respect to JL is 1.
And then this next term, and again, apply chain rule, partial of √(x) is going to be
-1/2. That's going to be 1/2/√(x) to the -1/2. That'll put my √(JL) minus 1 in the denominator. My chain rule partial derivative of this thing. It's going to look like 2JL. So these two coefficients will cancel. So there's my result. We can simplify this a little bit. So let's see what we have. I can, in this term here, multiply top and bottom by JL squared. That'll give me no change here. Over root JL squared minus 1 plus 1 plus JL over root JL squared minus 1. That's going to allow me to combine these two terms. 1 over 2 pi times 1 over 2 JL squared plus JL minus 1 over square root JL squared minus 1 plus 1. And then I'm going to find out where I made a mistake. Where have I gone awry here?
So when you multiply JL squared, you put that into the square root to be JL root 4. The middle term.
Yeah, you're right. That shouldn't be a square, right? So when I multiply the JL squared in here, put it under the radical, it becomes JL, which would give me 1 minus JL. So this term would just become JL. And then when I multiply JL here over JL squared, I should have 1 over JL.
To multiply again to match this.
So you're right that it should be multiply another JL, should give me minus JL squared here, squared minus 1. And that would carry through and give me this, which is what I want. Thank you.
My mistake, so I do need to multiply by JL to the fourth that comes under as JL squared to give me this in the denominator.
That's what I'm looking for, because next I'm going to pull these two terms up front, 1 minus 1 over 2 JL squared, and then this thing,
it's like JL squared minus 1 over the square root of that same thing.
Just this term to the 1 power times this term to the minus a half becomes square root of JL squared minus 1. There's some weirdness in this. What did I do wrong here?
For the second term, you multiply JL plus the square root of so. Yeah.
All right, let me see. This one over that plus JL over that. This is fine. This is my notes. This becomes that. Doesn't really matter. Actually, the final result. So we're gonna push that down, but that doesn't really help me any. Okay. Well, at any rate, this seems okay to me, but it doesn't match what I did because I did the simplification differently. Check, but partial of P 1/2 of 1 over JL. With respect to JL is some function of JL.
Okay. And we can evaluate that and now plug in for everything.
Okay. If there's any issue there, I'll fix that on the notes before I post them.
So once we have that,
now know is each of these coefficients, and they're evaluated only according to the DC operating point of the system.
So that we have now some inherent feedback in this converter, where our control does not uniquely determine this conversion ratio. Instead, changes in the output current and changes in the input voltage are fed back to adjust this conversion.
So look at the overall behavior of the system. We have to take that into account. We're going to have to do so by incorporating what are the behaviors of the converter from mu hat to output voltage, eventually be our controlled output voltage transfer function, but also from this inductor current back to mu hat. And that's going to form an internal feedback loop.
We'll also have some feed forward from the input. I'm not going to worry about that right now. I'm just going to assume the input's here in the DC for the moment.
Okay.
They asked after lecture last time,
this mu naught, the same thing as capital mu.
Just means conversion ratio evaluated at DC. Put this figure from the book.
Okay. So what I need to know then is,
I've got a block diagram down here of my control and then my equivalent circuit. Mu is going to somehow affect changes in the output voltage, but somehow be affected by changes in I hat.
So I need to solve the transfer functions of my equivalent circuit model in order to complete this block diagram.
And I'm going to need to know transfer function from mu hat to the output. But I'm also going to need to know the transfer function from mu hat to the inductor current, because the inductor current feeds back and affects the system. Okay.
Those two transfer functions are solved just off of this circuit, which is the same thing from the PWM bus.
This part has changed based on our analysis. This thing is just my small signal model from a PWM bus with D replaced with mu.
So we can solve those transfer functions just by looking back at our equivalent circuit in the PWM converter, and they're going to be the same thing we had before. Just GVD is going to become GV mu, or GVC is the notation used in the textbook, C being for the control mu. So what are those things? We need to know GVD, V hat over D hat. And then GID is IL hat over D hat. And these are going to be exactly the same as they were before. These are linearized small signal transfer functions. So I'm going to evaluate both of these with all other independent inputs set to zero. So VG hat is equal to zero. VG hat is equal to zero. In both cases, I can short this source out
small signal perturbations at the input. And I'm neglecting assuming the input's DC, so they're gone always, but even if they were there, when I'm looking at the linearized contribution with respect to one independent input, I can neglect all others in the linear system by superposition. I said VG had zero.
That effectively shorts out this source, so I'm not going to have to worry about it at all.
And then my entire circuit is just what's going on with primary.
I get an effective short here from VG hat being zero.
And all I have left is just this impedance divider.
So this first transfer function, V hat over D hat being this voltage, is going to look like VG D hat times this impedance divider, which is R in parallel with 1 over SC over SL plus R in parallel with 1 over SC. R in parallel with 1 over SC equal to R over 1 plus SCR.
That in the numerator and the denominator, multiply the whole thing top and bottom by 1 plus SCR, divide by R, a unity term. What I'm going to get back is VG times 1 over S squared LC plus SL over R plus 1. Same as the old buck converter. Denominator into my normalized form. So LC is 1 over omega naught squared. L over R is Q over omega naught. And all the characteristics of this behavior as they relate to my element values. Okay.
GID, done before, but sometimes
neglect when solving a buck converter, transfer function to current through the inductor, I. And with the circuit I have left, that's just going to be this voltage source divided by the total impedance here.
So it's going to look like VG times 1 over SL plus R in parallel with 1 over SC.
Which looks like what we just solved for, GVD divided by R in parallel with 1 over SC. So I'll simply take my result, divide it by this thing, get my GID.
So I'm going to divide this by R plus 1, R over 1 plus SCR. I divide it, it's going to flip the denominator up. And then my R, I'm going to put over here, VG over R.
The same set of poles, which I should for any transfer function through this system. Different DC gain, and now I have a zero. So just looking at the power stage here, my PWM case, what I have is D hat comes in, set by the controller, goes to VVD, which gives me V hat. VID gives me I hat. So these, again, are still going to apply for a quasi-resonant case. This is going to become mu hat. And mu hat is going to be determined by the sum of contributions from VG hat, FS hat, and I hat. This I hat
is going to be derived from UHAD by this GID.
So if we plug all this together, our overall block diagram is going to look like mu hat goes through GID, give us I hat, and DVD to give us V hat. This is power stage. Just from the PWM model.
Basically, the low frequency effects what was existent in my PWM model, considering only the filter elements.
And then the effect of
adding these resonant behaviors, changing over to our quasi-resonant switch, is going to be this part down here.
It's going to be Ki times I-hat. Back and adds to FS-hat times, excuse me, KC. And also the G hat times KV, which I'm not worrying about for the moment.
So maybe G hat is zero. So that's now my complete block diagram. If I want to control this thing, what I want to know is what is the transfer function from my control FSF to my output VNet. To do so, I have to collapse this internal feedback loop here.
So in order to do that, I'm going to solve. It's going to be the normal or 1 minus T function for this. Just write that out. I can write for this loop here, happens mu hat is equal to the sum of these three things, vg hat kv plus fs hat kc plus ki times I hat, where I hat is gid times mu hat.
Then if I subtract this term over to the left, I get u hat times 1 minus ki gid. Divide that back over to the right.
U hat is equal to vg hat kv plus fs hat kc over 1 minus ki gid.
Now that I know mu hat, if I want to get the v hat, I just multiply by gp.
So my eventual transfer function, I'll call gvc equal to v hat over fs hat. It's going to be, now I can evaluate with vg hat is equal to zero. It's going to be kc over 1 minus ki gid times GVD. So this term here
is my difference from the PWM case. Right. I just had my PWM converter, my controlled output transfer function would be GVD, transfer function from D
for the output voltage. Now it's that times this factor, which has to do with this inherent internal feedback loop. When I have this resonant type switch, if I change switching frequency, the dynamics of that, how much voltage is applied at the switch node, change because the power is changing, because the switching frequency is changing, because the operating point is changing. If I just have a normal buck converter, if I set a duty cycle and the input voltage isn't changing, the output voltage is just the filtered version of that, D times VG, right? Here, because of this resonance, so I start changing switching frequency around, behaviors of that converter change, right? And that resonance is biased by some current. Those behaviors depend on what's going on there. That makes sense? Okay, how are we on time? A little short. Okay, so that's transfer function. Next page. So EVC is V times KC over minus KI GID. Is that right? So let's plug this stuff in. I'm also going to remind myself what these transfer functions were. GVD, I'm going to write as VG over D of S. Or D of S is equal to S squared LC plus SL over R plus 1. I'm just going to do that so that as I begin plugging stuff in, I don't have to write this denominator for both of these transfer functions in the first few steps. Then GID is equal to VG over R times 1 plus SCR over D of S, same denominator. Plug in here, GVC then is VG over D of S times KC over 1 minus KI times VG over R plus SCR over D of S. I have my D of S in the denominator here and here. So I'm going to multiply everything through by D of S. Why I wanted to not have to write it for the first couple steps. That will give me VG KC over my D of S squared LC plus SL over R plus 1 minus KI VG over R plus SCR. And then all I need to do is group terms down here in the denominator, and then I'm going to have to divide through by my term, the coefficient of S to the power 0, to get it in my standard form. Look like VG times KC in the denominator, or numerator, excuse me, times S squared LC plus S times L over R minus SCR KI VG over R. So the R's will cancel. And I'll get VG times C times KI plus 1 minus the constant term here, AI VG over R. And I've got to divide everything by this term, so I'll get unity in my S to the power 0 term in the denominator.
it'll look like dividing by that EGKC over 1 minus KI BG over R over S squared LC over 1 minus KI VG over R plus S plus L over R minus VG KI C over 1 minus KI VG over R plus 1.
Okay. Thus ends the math section of today's lecture. So what happened? So our normal transfer function for just a PWM buck converter was GBD plus BG over this denominator, S squared LC plus SL over R plus 1. So what do we have? Well, VG was our DC gain. That got multiplied by this here. Our DC gain changed. Omega naught was 1 over root LC, which is this term here. And that got divided by this thing. Or omega naught changed. Then this term, Q over omega naught, was L over R, this thing here. So that changed. Subtracted off and divided it. This is the omega naught change, so it's really this. BGKIC is subtracted off of our Q, or Q changes. So we're going to have similar dynamics resulting. We still have some constant gain and then second order system down here. But the salient features have all shifted by some amount. How much depends on what these parameters actually are and depends on the design and the converter that it goes into. Generally, DC gain is going to have a huge change, but that's because of what our input is more than anything. So this is the transfer function from switching frequency to output voltage, whereas GVD was the transfer function from duty cycle to output voltage. If you just look at what the input to that transfer function is, duty cycle versus switching frequency, one change in duty cycle is a lot of change. One change in frequency is not a lot of change. Changing by 1 hertz is nothing. Changing by 100% on the duty cycle is big. That DC gain is going to change, but we can just adjust our control feedback and get that out of there, right? So that's not really an issue. But potentially an issue is how much these things shift and how. Where Q is going to be reduced, this is an effective Q of the transfer function, not saying the actual quality factor of our inductor or anything else has changed. That could be a good thing. IQs hard to stabilize. Then the resonant frequency, we'll have to look at how much it shifts. Shifts according to this KI feedback. And it's going to turn out that that KI is generally pretty low. And this will be okay in the buck converter. So to look at this, I'm just going to do an example here. So here's a simulation of these quasi-resonant buck converters. With diode, so I've got filter elements out here, 10 micro inductor, 10 micro capacitor, on resonant elements, a 1 micro inductor, and a 10 nano capacitor. And I'm going to run this, similar conditions, FS 1 megahertz. What else can I say about it? AL is approximately 1, so it's near the ZVS bound. ZVS bound. Out is 60 watts.
V is 12 volts. F is 0.6. And then my parameters here, KC, KI, and KV, recalculated are 6.24 minus 2. AI is minus 0.005. KV is 5.6. E is minus 4. E. Not exponential, just copying them out of MATLAB. So you shift the decimal 2 digits. So that's the design. Run this in a simulator and figure out what the transfer function is. And on the next slide, I'm going to compare to just the PWM buck if I got rid of all these resonant elements and let it hard switch. So here's the control output transfer function, GVD. On the top for a hard switch buck, and then GVC on the bottom for the quasi-resin. So first thing you see, there's a huge difference in the DC gain. Like I said, that's really just what the input is. We need to have a much smaller gain when we're changing switching frequencies, because I'm going to have a much bigger range of switching frequencies to change to do anything. Just in terms of raw quantitatively, my D goes between 0 and 1, my switching frequency can change by a million if I go from 1 megahertz to 2 megahertz. Okay. So if I just take that out of it and normalize both of these so that they have the same DC gain, here's what these two transfer functions look like. Indeed, in the ZVF quasi-resonant curve, my Q has reduced a little bit. If you look real close, my switching frequency has changed a slight bit. But really, almost no difference in these two. Okay. The difference is, in fact, maybe a little bit advantageous, reducing the Q. My phase roll off a little bit lower, I might be able to push higher and still get some improved phase margin with the crossover frequency. Why does this happen? Why is there really no significant change? Well, one, all of the dynamics, all the behaviors contributed by this resonant switch are all way up at high frequency. And we still equivalently average those away in our modeling. The behavior of those independently, and then looking at the dynamics of the low frequency filter. Okay. That's valid here because anything in the buck converter that's going on with these resonant switches is on the other side of an LC filter compared to the output. So really, whatever this thing does, all that matters is those volt seconds at the switch node, and those are going to determine what the output is. There are some dynamics from that output filter. They're way down at low frequency, way below anything that's going on with my switching frequency with any of these resonant behaviors. All they really do is they're going to pick off the average of the switch node voltage. Buck is somewhat of a unique converter in that sense, in that the buck has this separation. All of my switching stuff is going on at the input, then all of my filtering stuff is at the output. I've just got a actually defined LC filter. If you look at something else like a boost, got inductor at the input, capacitor at the output. It's not easily expressible. It's just switching, then filtering it. Equivalently, any converter does this type of thing. Switches and somehow filters to get the DC back. Buck's the one where the topology itself is separable. Right. So there it is. That's the small signal model that I could use to control this quasi-resonant converter. Who's our real first foray into control modeling in this class. You can go back through that same process and do any of these quasi-resonant converters, any of the quasi-square wave converters, equivalent PWM converters with just the resonant switch, and get transfer functions out of it. Same process. But the question may be, okay, what about these other things that we've looked at? When I look at something like a dual active bridge, that's not a resonant switch implemented inside of a parent converter. Right? That's kind of its own thing. I can't say, oh, well, this is
ZBS quasi square wave converter inside of a buck. It's not, it's a separate type of converter. If they want to look at an SRC, an LLC, look at something else. They're not just resonant switches inside of basic PWM topologies. How might we go about doing small signal modeling of that? I'll give you a way. But before we get to that, I'm going to interlude with something else. So there are two topics we're going to cover in the remainder of the course. In introducing those on Wednesday, they're going to be, first I want to talk a little bit about switch capacitor converters. Saw some of those submitted on your design documents for the Tiny Box Challenge. It looks like there may be some misconceptions about how they operate or other things. They're not covered anywhere else. So I'm going to talk about switch capacitor converters next. Then in the class, I'm going to talk about discrete time modeling, a different approach to modeling converters that's going to be able to give both large signal and small signal models for AC link converters, for the quasi-resonant converters, for PWM, for anything. Those are the two main topics left in the class. We'll start switch capacitor on Wednesday.